Please be seated. Okay, we are on our third case for the day. Before we begin, you will note that we are sitting six. Justice Hagedorn will not be participating in this case. So I will call the case, State versus Hinkle. Are you prepared to begin, counsel? Please do.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Christina Starner.
Excuse me. The microphone is not working well for you. Maybe the marshal can help you. I think it needs to be closer to your mouth, like sort of like that. These mics are wonderful if you speak into them, just so, but if it's not just so, we lose you.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Okay.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Christina Starner, and I represent the petitioner, Matthew Hinkle. The fundamental question in this case is whether one county's criminal court has original jurisdiction over a juvenile under 938.183 sub 1b, when that jurisdiction is based solely on a different county's juvenile court's previous waiver. Today we're asking this court to clarify that it's the juvenile court in the county of venue of the instant case that must have previously waived jurisdiction in order for sub 1B to apply.
So you want us to have these decisions made county by county, regardless of the connection of the underlying matters in two counties?
Yes, we believe that it's a county by county determination, and the reason is, a few reasons. First, it's each county runs its own juvenile system. It's called the Milwaukee County Juvenile Court, Children's Court, they call it. Even though there are several branches and several judges, it's the Milwaukee County Juvenile Court, the Fond du Lac County Juvenile Court. And also, if you look at surrounding statutes like 51.14 sub 2, that deals with mental health review officers, it says that each court assigned to exercise jurisdiction shall designate a mental health review officer for those types of petitions. And so each court, there's only one mental health review officer per county, even in Milwaukee County, which has the most number of branches, there's only one mental health review officer. And so it wouldn't make sense for it to mean that each branch shall designate its own mental health review officer. So that's why we believe it's a county. When it says the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction, it means the county-wide juvenile court. And also, if it were meant to be judge-specific, we think it would have said the judge assigned to exercise jurisdiction.
So once waived, always waived. That's kind of a saying that goes on that trial judges who have dealt with these cases take pretty seriously. It's a notion that exists out there. You just don't think that's true, or?
Just because it's called once waived, always waived, and we, in the blueprint for change, that is the heading. But just because it's called once waived, always waived, does not mean that there can't be restrictions attached to it.
How would your logic work for, there's the prohibition against commingling people who are in the adult system with people who are in the juvenile system. How would that work once you have someone who's in the adult system serving jail time or in the adult system? What do you think would happen with the disposition of the juvenile case, even if they were tried in juvenile court? Would you have someone who's serving an adult sentence be commingled with the juveniles in the juvenile system?
Well, if it's an actual adult, you know, it's 17 or 18.
Well, you're waived and you are considered an adult. Once you're waived, you face adult penalties in the adult system, in the adult jail. And there, I mean, there really is a pretty, you have to keep them very
correct.
Separate.
Right. I believe that's because of the Rape Elimination Act. But, yes, they can be kept, they must be kept separate, but that doesn't prohibit our argument at all, because there are oftentimes juveniles who have both an adult and a juvenile, a juvenile disposition and an adult sentence. In terms of where they go, you know, it varies, but there's Lincoln Hills, and juveniles can stay there until they're 18, unless it's a serious juvenile offender program juvenile. And they can stay there potentially up till age 25 if there is that juvenile disposition in the SJOP. But in any regards, this happens, I'm told, all the time where you have dual jurisdictions or dual sentences.
Yeah, an adult sentence, you can send a juvenile, someone of a certain age, to a juvenile setting.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wonder if you were actually sent to jail or prison, you then would commingle that
no.
person with juveniles.
Oh, if it's once they get to the institution or the detention facility, I think it's dependent on the age, if they're under 18, then they're with other juveniles, and then at 18 they're sent to the adult institution, I believe.
Counsel, does the record reflect what the practice throughout the state is with regard to once waived, always waived? Is that indeed the way that it is being interpreted throughout the state, or does the record have no illumination on that question?
In terms of the record, I don't know that there's anything in this record, but I have heard from public defenders that practice juvenile law that courts have been interpreting it our way. I've heard that there is one juvenile court that interprets it judge-specific, and there are also courts that interpret it the state's way, as Fond du Lac did. I believe I was told that the Milwaukee County Juvenile Court, some of the judges do interpret it our way, county-specific.
Counsel, your argument seems to depend very heavily on a grammatical analysis of the statute. So I'd like to take a look at, and in particular, the use of the definite article when referring to the court. So I'd like you to compare and contrast the use of courts plural in 938.183 sub 1 with the definite article, the court singular, in sub 1 sub b. So sub 1 says that courts of criminal jurisdiction, courts, plural, of criminal jurisdiction have exclusive original jurisdiction over all of the following. And there commences a list, part of which says a juvenile who is alleged to have violated any state criminal law. If the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction under this chapter in chapter 48 has waived its jurisdiction over the juvenile for a previous violation, and the charges are still pending. So the introduction in sub 1 refers to courts plural. The list of juveniles to whom this applies refers to court singular with the definite article. Isn't the use of the definite article in singular court simply identifying the juvenile who had been waived into criminal jurisdiction, and then sub 1, using the plural, says if you meet that condition, all courts in the state may exercise, well, shall exercise exclusive jurisdiction?
First, to address the first matter in terms of the plural, courts. I believe that's plural because it encompasses the subsections that follow. And I think if there had just been one of those, then it would say the court. But it's referring to plural subsections there. It's referring to many different possibilities. So I believe that's why it says courts.
Well, the possibilities there are referring to juveniles, right? Juveniles who meet certain conditions. So courts across the state may exercise exclusive original jurisdiction over the following juveniles who meet these conditions, right? Is that an appropriate way of understanding that just as a general matter?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then we go down and we look, okay, so what juveniles does this include and what conditions must it satisfy for all courts in the state to be able to exercise jurisdiction? And one of those is if the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction has waived its jurisdiction or the juvenile for a previous violation. So why should we not just read that as identifying a condition that the juvenile meets? And if he meets that condition, then courts across the state may exercise jurisdiction over him.
Throughout the chapter, there are many instances where it starts off broad, and then it narrows in and gets specific. This is not uncommon for this to happen. Oftentimes it'll say, a court assigned to exercise jurisdiction may, and then it'll narrow down and say the court. When it says a court, it's speaking broadly. For whatever reason, the legislature wanted to speak broadly, and then it narrows down to this specific case. But in terms of the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction, it has to be the court in the specific county of venue, because every other time we see the term the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction in the chapter, that's what it means. And so this would be an anomaly for the court to suddenly refer to the past court or to refer to the statewide juvenile system as a whole. For example, whenever the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction is actually exercising jurisdiction, mm-hmm. it says the court shall. So clearly it's in the county of venue. But even when the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction is not exercising jurisdiction, and we know that the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction does not have to have competency or be exercising or have ever exercised jurisdiction in order to be the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction. But when the adult or the municipal court has jurisdiction, then it still refers to the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction. And then we have a term, we have a model for what the legislature wants to say when they are referring to broadly to any juvenile court throughout the state, and that is any court or a court assigned to exercise jurisdiction. So it's we have a model for that already. And if we're being consistent, I think consistency dictates that you have to remain the same. And so if that's used at one or if it's at other parts of the chapter, then why would they not use it here if any court applied?
So let's look at that model. So I'm going to refer to your brief at page 19, where you write, if the legislature wanted section 938.183 sub 1 sub b to include the waiver of any court throughout the state that had previously been assigned to exercise juvenile jurisdiction in another county, it would have stated that a juvenile belongs in adult court if, quote, a court, close quote, assigned to exercise jurisdiction under this chapter has waived its jurisdiction over the juvenile for a previous violation. So that's where you get to the indefinite article as opposed to the definite article, right? Okay. So we also look at the definition sections when we construe our statutes. And in section 938.02, there's a definition for courts, and that's in sub 2M. And it says that the term court means, when used with reference to a juvenile who is subject to 938.183, which is this case, it means a court of criminal jurisdiction, right? So is there any reason we should not simply use the definition of court as we're instructed to do by 938.02, specifically when we're looking at 938.183, and read the court as a court?
So yes, in the definition section, it's just dealing with the definition of court. And it's just dealing with the word court and the three jurisdictions of court: the municipal court, criminal court, juvenile court. It's not dealing with the articles. So I would argue the articles in the definition section are not important, because there's no context for those articles yet. So it has no meaning yet. The articles are important when they're in the text, when it's telling us what the law is. But here, the definite and the indefinite articles only have meaning when you put them in context. And if you look at the definition of judge, it has all these. So I think these articles in the definition section are completely arbitrary, because there's no context yet until they're actually applied to the law. I don't think we can disregard, once you get into what the law is, we can't just dismiss the distinction between the and a and any, because there are times when if you change the to any, it completely changes the meaning of the statute. Mm-hmm. It'll completely change the rule.
So if we are required to use the definite article in reading 938.183, then in context, isn't it simply identifying the court that actually waived jurisdiction? So we have, we're looking for juveniles that are subject to exclusive criminal jurisdiction across the state, right? And so we look down the list of juveniles that are subject to that kind of jurisdiction. And we see it's this kind of juvenile. Juveniles violated, alleged to have violated the state criminal law. And now we get to the point of the waiver. Right? There's only actually, when the court waives, it's always going to be a specific court that waives, right? So we see, all right, it's a juvenile who's got this history, subject to a court that waived its jurisdiction over that juvenile with respect to charges that are still pending. So now we've identified the juvenile by reference to the court that waived their jurisdiction. But it seems that you need to go a step beyond that and say, and only that court may then exercise that exclusive criminal jurisdiction. Where do you get the additional language to move you that next step? Because otherwise it seems like you're putting an awful lot of weight on one three-letter word.
Oh, USA.
Well, we'll reiterate that consistency dictates that it has to be the juvenile court in the county of venue of the instant case, because that's where it is everywhere else. And we're not aware of any...
What do you mean that that's where it is everywhere else?
Everywhere else in the chapter, when it says the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction, it has to be. There's no other way to interpret it.
Well, and you brought up the question of context, right? So in other parts of the chapter, it's going to be dealing with different contexts. And so the context that we're dealing with here specifically is identifying those juveniles who, because of something that happened before, are subject to exclusive criminal jurisdiction in all the courts of the state. So that's the That's the context that we're looking at. And here we see juvenile that has been subject to this prior condition. And that is, the condition is that he had been subject to juvenile jurisdiction, but that had been waived to criminal. So saying the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction waived its jurisdiction over this individual seems like it's just identifying the juvenile. Here's the juvenile, subject to juvenile jurisdiction. The court assigned jurisdiction over him, waived. Now what? Okay, we've got that part figured out. That's his past, and we've got that part figured out. Now, why should that mean that only that county is entitled to exercise original exclusive jurisdiction, criminal jurisdiction over him?
Well, I mean, it doesn't say in the same county when it's true other places, like with reverse waiver. It says the statute 970.032 says that the adult court shall determine whether to retain jurisdiction or to transfer jurisdiction to the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction. It's in the same county. It doesn't say that, but it's assumed. Same thing with the municipality statutes.
Well, that's because that's where the offense occurred, right?
Well, except we have a model for what they want to say when they want to expand it to if the legislature just used the court for everything, for the county of venue court and that court and that court in other counties, then that would be reasonable to say, well, they can just bounce around. But consistently throughout this chapter, the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction is looking at it from the vantage point of this specific case, this specific juvenile, this specific county.
If it had been off court, that is in 938-183-B that we're looking at, 1B, if it read instead of if the court assigned, if it read if a court assigned, would you be here today?
No.
So it's all about the definite article, the, and meaning something different than a or any.
Correct.
Would the legislative purpose inform your interpretation?
Yes, because in 938.01, I believe it's C and F, it says we are to interpret this chapter liberally in accordance with the following purposes. And one of those purposes is to promote individualization in the juvenile justice system. Another is for the... for the juvenile courts to have more discretion. And our interpretation, you have to factor that in because that's a purpose that's in the text. So that's relevant and important to a plain reading of the statute. We have to factor that in to the plain reading. And so our interpretation promotes exactly that. It promotes individualization. It promotes more judicial discretion. It promotes making the best decision possible for society and for the juvenile, considering everything. If a juvenile gets a shot at a waiver hearing in each new county.
So I'm not having as much trouble with the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction because I see that as the court, that's the court that waived the juvenile. That's the juvenile court. How do you relate that, though, to the first part of that, of 938.183(1)(b), when it talks about courts, plural, of criminal jurisdiction have exclusive original jurisdiction over a juvenile who's alleged to have violated criminal law if the court, basically if they've been waived? So why is it courts, plural? What do you make of that and how it relates to the court who already waived it?
Well, it's just speaking broadly about the adult courts in the state, and then it narrows it down to this adult courts have jurisdiction when any of the following applies. And it's covering a broad, courts, that covers 1A, 1AM, 1B, and 1C. So I think that's why it's plural there. I think that's why it says courts, because it's covering everything there.
But you're still reading it to be courts only in the same jurisdiction, only in the same county as the court who waived the juvenile, correct?
Not necessarily. I think courts here, I think that could be either one, actually.
Okay, but. Well, that's what I'm... So explain that. So we've got a court who waived, so that's the second part. The court waived the juvenile, and now can all courts of criminal jurisdiction in any county exercise original jurisdiction? I mean, that's really the issue, right?
Well, then, yes, but only if, and then it narrows it down in 1B. So I think we have to look at 1B to define which one it is in sub 1 here.
All right, so you're saying the court then only relates to the one who waived the juvenile.
Right.
Even though it's not really the court who waived the juvenile you're referring to the county. Because as you started out by saying, there's some counties that have juvenile-specific courts.
Well, by courts here, courts of criminal jurisdiction, I think that does mean throughout the state.
How do you relate that to the second part? Because if it's the court assigned who waived the juvenile and you're in a county like Milwaukee where the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction that waived the juvenile is not the court that's going to hear it as an adult court, I mean, I lose you there.
I think if this were just one long sentence in 1B, it would say the court of criminal jurisdiction has exclusive original jurisdiction over a juvenile who is alleged to have violated any state criminal law, and then reading the rest of 1B. I think it would have said, if it's separated like that, the court, because that's what it says in other parts of the chapter, like with reverse waiver, the court. The court of criminal jurisdiction shall transfer or decide whether to transfer jurisdiction or retain jurisdiction. I think if this were just one long sentence, it would have said the court of criminal jurisdiction has exclusive jurisdiction when the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction has previously waived the juvenile.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court, Assistant Attorney General Aaron O'Neill, on behalf of the state of Wisconsin, which is the respondent in this case. There's significant agreement, I think, actually, in this case between the parties about the interpretation of Section 938.183.1b. There's an agreement that the legislature intended, at least in some cases, once a juvenile is waived into adult court, that juvenile will thereafter begin subsequent cases in adult court if that prior case is pending or it resulted in a conviction. So the general idea that a prior waiver can result in the adult court having exclusive original jurisdiction over a juvenile in some cases is not something in dispute. But as the court discussed during counsel's argument, the issue here is where that previous waiver had to have occurred in order to confer exclusive original criminal jurisdiction over a juvenile in later cases. State's position in this case is that the waiver could have happened in any juvenile court in Wisconsin, and thus once a defendant anywhere is waived into adult court, all subsequent cases involving that juvenile that allege violations of criminal law will start out originally in the criminal court.
Why isn't the remedy here reverse waiver? I don't see a lot of discussion or hear a lot of discussion regarding reverse waiver. What role, if any, does reverse waiver play in this analysis of either question that's before the court today, or any question before the court today?
Do you mean if
Let
this
me be
court,
more specific.
Yeah.
Was it ineffective assistance of counsel after arriving at what could be interpreted as a reasonable interpretation of the statute to not seek reverse waiver?
Under the record as it's established now, I don't have an opinion whether it was ineffective assistance of counsel. That claim has not been raised and it has not been explored. We don't know why counsel did not request a reverse waiver. There was a Mockner hearing. That claim hasn't been presented.
The claim for ineffective assistance of counsel has been raised, but not vis-a-vis the reverse waiver part of it. Is
correct.
That correct? Yeah. I think there are some judges that would bristle at the idea. I think of a judge who's since passed in Langlade County, Antigo, Wisconsin, Jim Jensen, wonderful guy. He took his juvenile court seriously, one judge county, and he knew every juvenile, a young kid, he knew their dad, probably went to school with their uncle, and my guess is he would, and he gave great individualized attention consistent with the statutory purpose set forth in 93801. My guess is he would bristle at the idea that some judge in Milwaukee County has waived, the waiver of a judge in Milwaukee County has removed from him the discretion that is required under the purpose of the statute. Just bristle at that. How do you respond? I mean, why these good judges trying to fulfill the purpose of the statute would be hamstrung because of some judge from Milwaukee, God forbid.
Always picking on Milwaukee.
The justice from Milwaukee has a response, but I'll defer to the advocate.
Our response would be that is a decision for the legislature to make. Regardless of what the judge thinks might be appropriate and what might be proper for him to be bound by a decision of a judge in a different county, the legislature has made the call, and that's the legislature's prerogative to make that decision.
That's right, and let's see what the legislature has said, and let's see how clearly it has said it. In the Court of Appeals, you have three judges, and one judge sees it differently. The dissenting judge focuses on the argument and accepts, in large part, the argument advanced by your opposing counsel that the definite article the means something different than a or any. Seems to me that's not outrageous. I'm not sure how courts around this state apply this statute, but let's say for argument purposes that it's applied in various manners. I'm not sure what those are. And I would say, well, you know, those judges aren't lawless. They're interpreting the article the to have some meaning. So isn't it ambiguous? Isn't it ambiguous? And if it is ambiguous, then we go to the textual purpose of the statute. And we're so lucky here. We have the purpose of the statute. We don't have to make it up or go to some legislative history and pull it out of a bulletin that maybe the legislator individually never read. You know, we've got it right in the text. And the purpose is, in part, to provide an individualized assessment of each alleged and adjudicated delinquent juvenile in order to prevent further delinquent behavior and so that the person is more capable of living a productive and responsible life in the community. You know, individualized assessment and the five factors that are considered when a judge decides to do a waiver are individualized factors. So why don't we just go to the text of the statute, get the purpose, it's ambiguous, and that's the way that it is when you do it consistent with the stated purpose.
The statute is not ambiguous.
Well,
the
statute, it's clear.
It's clear. It is referring to the court, meaning the court in a specific county, but a court that has previously waived the juvenile.
See, as a former English teacher, I think the means something different than a. I think that a and any can be interpreted oftentimes in the same way. But the definite article is something different. Maybe I'm wrong and maybe I'm not reasonable. Let me just tell you that you could say I'm wrong, but don't say I'm not reasonable. Just between you and me, okay?
Sure.
Okay.
I agree that had the legislature used a or any, our position would be exactly the same, because it would be, I think, offer a bit more clarity on whether this county by county analysis is foreclosed.
A bit more clarity.
I think that would foreclose it, but it doesn't mean that the statute as it is written is unclear.
No, it just means it could be more clear.
Yeah, its statute is referring to the specific juvenile court that waived the juvenile previously. As it was discussed during the previous argument, the interpretation of the statute to refer to any juvenile court, essentially, in the state is consistent with the idea that once a juvenile is waived into adult court, he or she is always waived into adult court, at least to start new criminal proceedings. And this legislative intent, I think, is actually reflected in the language of the statute itself. The legislature determined that once a juvenile does something that's serious enough to be put in adult court, that juvenile should start out all future cases in adult court. That's, I think, evident from both sub 1B, which we're interpreting today, or we're talking about today, and also 1C, which starts out cases in adult court after a case where the adult court had original jurisdiction over the juvenile. The biggest weakness with the defendant's interpretation of the statute is there's just very little in the text of the statute to support a county-by-county analysis. What the defendant is proposing is fairly specific, and if the legislature had truly intended it, I think it would have been a lot less cryptic than the defendant's argument. The defendant's having us look through Chapter 938 at various subsections of the statute, and analyzing the words that appear before the word court. If the legislature truly intended to have a county-by-county analysis, I don't think we'd have to go on sort of this treasure hunt through Chapter 938 to find out what it really meant. I think it would have expressed its intent just a little bit more clearly. And as we explained in our briefs, all the other uses of court throughout the Chapter 938 make sense when they're viewed in context. And I understand that we interpret statutes in light of, the surrounding statutes and other related statutes, but a lot of these statutes really don't have anything to do with the issue that's in this case, which is a waiver of juvenile jurisdiction and waiver of juveniles into adult court. A lot of the other uses of court throughout 938 deal with other things, such as dispositions and sharing records and things of that nature.
So if there's not a lot in the statute to help us out, and the legislature wasn't as clear as they could have been, doesn't that get us back to what Justice Ann Walsh Bradley was asking about? Isn't the statute then ambiguous? I mean, to say that the legislature always says exactly what it wants to say is just not the reality. But isn't that get us right back there? If you're saying it means one thing and the defense says it means another, and there really isn't a lot there to tell us either way, isn't that ambiguity?
Our position is that there's no ambiguity in the statute, because the statute is specifically referring to a particular court. It's going to be a different court in every case, of course. It's going to be the court that waived the juvenile previously. And so that is a clear interpretation of the statute. The defense's proposed interpretation, I don't think, is a reasonable one.
Why not?
It can't render the statute ambiguous. And the reason it's not is because it is essentially writing words into the text of the statute. There is, reading the statute, I don't see anything in there that supports any suggestion that this statute should be interpreted to take a county-by-county approach.
Well, wouldn't your interpretation also be reading the word maybe all courts into it as opposed to, I mean, either way, I think either of you could make the argument that you're potentially reading words in.
I agree with the Court of Appeals interpretation of the statute, which is the court that waived jurisdiction is the court that waived jurisdiction. The court assigned to exercise jurisdiction that waived jurisdiction is the court that previously waived the juvenile. So it's referring to a specific court. I'm not asking this court to read any or all courts into the statute. I'm saying that the statute refers to a specific court, and that is the court that previously waived the juvenile.
Aren't you asking us to read B as A?
No, we're not, because we are, again, it is a specific court that is the focus of the statute, and that court is the court that previously waived the juvenile. It has the effect of, when it's interpreted, that any court that waives a juvenile in a previous case will have the effect of conferring adult court jurisdiction on any future criminal activity by the juvenile. But the statute itself is referring to the specific court that waived the juvenile previously. I want to mention just briefly the discussion about the policy arguments behind Chapter 938 and the individualized detention. That is the goal of the Juvenile Justice Code, and the idea that a lot of this is county-focused, and we'll concede that that certainly is the intent expressed in the first section of the Chapter 938, and if you read Chapter 938, obviously a lot of the dispositions carried out by juvenile courts are focused at the county level and not at the state level. Our response to that is that the legislature has made a decision in certain cases to take juveniles out of this system and to grant original adult court jurisdiction over them. And that is the case we're presented with today. So the policies behind the Juvenile Justice Code really don't apply here, because we are dealing with now a juvenile who's been moved to the adult court system. I do want to mention one other thing. Justice Bradley brought up ineffective assistance of counsel for not requesting a reverse waiver hearing. I do want to mention that just because a case, a court has original jurisdiction over a juvenile, does not mean that the case will remain in the adult court system. There are the reverse waiver procedures in Chapter 970 and Chapter 971, depending on whether the case involves felonies or misdemeanors. And those are essentially the same factors that guide the decision whether to reverse waive a juvenile back into juvenile court are the same factors that guide courts' initial decision to waive a juvenile into adult court. And so there is, just because the legislature has granted original jurisdiction over waived juveniles does not mean that a case will necessarily be resolved in adult court. If judges want to make sure that juveniles are treated in the juvenile system because it's appropriate, judges have that opportunity to make that decision.
So are you saying that essentially this statutory provision creates a presumption of where the case is going to be heard?
That's correct.
Okay. And so all of the policy objectives identified in 938.01, those could all be accomplished still if the court decides that reverse waiver is appropriate.
That's correct. And I will note one other thing. The burden is on the defendant to prove reverse waiver, where it is on the state to prove the initial waiver, but the defendant on a reverse waiver actually has a lower burden of proof. The defendant just has to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that reverse waiver is appropriate. The state's initial burden is clear and convincing evidence. So there, it's not as harsh on the defendant as the defendant suggests that it is. Unless there are any further questions, we ask that you affirm the judgment of conviction.
Thank you very much. So why isn't reverse waiver the answer here?
In practice, reverse waiver is very, very difficult. It's very rare that those are granted. They are different burdens. The burden is on the juvenile. But if the juvenile fails to prove any one of the prongs, then the adult court has to deny it. So we would argue it is a very difficult standard.
So why would it be difficult in this circumstance, though? I can see the point if a court decided to waive jurisdiction into adult court. It goes through those factors and it decides, yes, those factors are met, off you go to adult court. Reverse waiver under those circumstances, I think, would definitely be difficult because you're trying to unwind the decision that was just made. In this circumstance, the juvenile finds himself in adult court by operation of law rather than through an analysis of the factors that go into either waiver or reverse waiver. So why would it be especially difficult under these circumstances to accomplish reverse waiver?
Well, aside from the burden being on the juvenile, and as we said before, if the juvenile does not prove even one of the prongs, then the adult court has no discretion at all and has to deny it. But, I mean, there's case law where the adult court, there's a full reverse waiver hearing, and the adult court grants reverse waiver, and it got overturned on appeal for various reasons. But it just goes to show that these can and do get overturned, and it's a very strict standard. And in real life, in practice, I'm told that these are extraordinarily difficult. These are very rare to win on reverse waiver. So regardless of what when judges are applying the law and they're looking at these prongs, and that combined with the burden being on the juvenile and the juvenile having no chance if he fails to prove even one of them, then I think that translates to a very difficult standard. The state mentioned that argued that the legislative intent in 938.01 would not apply anymore because the juvenile has been waived before. But the problem with that is it sort of begs the question because it assumes the conclusion before applying the purpose to the statute. So if you interpret it in our way, then every juvenile who is in a new county is an alleged delinquent juvenile. And so giving a juvenile in each new county a shot at a waiver hearing, it does promote that individualization. I would say that absolutely applies because otherwise you're assuming that the statute is one way before applying the purposes. And we'd also like to clarify that we don't have to wait for a finding of ambiguity in order to apply 938.01, those purposes, because it's in the text. It's relevant to a plain reading of the text, unlike extrinsic sources that you requires a finding of ambiguity before you consult them.
If the standard is hard to meet for reverse waiver, when the burden is just preponderance of the evidence, doesn't that necessarily mean that it's even harder for the state to get a waiver into adult court?
In practice, no. That's the way it actually plays out is waiver hearings are granted much, much more often than reverse.
Well, might that be because the facts justify it rather than the difficulty inherent in the test?
That's fair, but we're saying that reverse waiver is not a reasonable or a sufficient replacement when Mr. Hinkle could have had a waiver hearing. And that is what he lost in this case by interpreting it the state's way. And there's no replacement for that, not even reverse waiver. Even though the judge considers the same factors, it's harder.
Thank you.
You can conclude in a sentence or two, please.
Okay, thank you. We would ask the court to find that the court assigned to exercise jurisdiction is the court in the county of venue of the instant case, and find that the court of criminal jurisdiction did not have competency.
Thank you very much. Thank you for a very interesting case. This is kind of a interesting intersect that we haven't looked at before. Thank you for good briefs, too. We are now going to take a recess, and the court will meet in closed conference at 3:00. We are adjourned.